This is the RTE News at 1 with Brian Dobson. Good afternoon. The headlines this Tuesday lunchtime. A man has appeared in court charged with the murder of 37-year-old Shane Knott in County Kildare. The Cabinet has approved proposals to increase sentences for knife-related crimes. And the Israeli government has launched a diplomatic offensive against Iran as it considers a military response to last weekend's missile and drone attacks. The news in detail with Brian Jennings.
A 43-year-old man has appeared in court charged with the murder of 37-year-old Shane Knott in Naas in County Kildare. He was arrested on Sunday night by Gardaí investigating the death of Shane Knott, whose body was discovered in the garden of a house in Naas on Sunday afternoon. Karen Creed reports.
Padraig Delaney, with an address of 6th Lane in Eustace Domain in Naas, was brought before Naas District Court this morning. Detective Sergeant Enda Gallagher told the court that a person called the Garda station in Naas on April 14th with concerns over a death. He said the accused was arrested later that night, and at 11:40pm he was charged with murder on a date unknown between April 3rd and April 14th. The court also heard that a number of items were seized at the scene of the crime as part of Garda investigations. The accused did not speak during the hearing. His solicitor, Tim Kennelly, made an application for free legal aid, which was granted. He also made two separate applications for a second independent post-mortem to be carried out and also for an independent examination of the crime scene to be carried out. They were both granted. The accused was remanded in custody to appear in court again on Thursday.
The Israeli government says it has launched a diplomatic offensive against Iran as it considers a military response to the missile and drone attack against it on Sunday. Israel's allies have repeatedly urged it to show restraint. Israel's foreign minister says he's written to dozens of countries, urging them to sanction Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. The British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak is expected to speak to the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu later today to discuss how to prevent further escalation. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi said his country would react to the slightest action against its interest with a severe, extensive and painful response. Iran's Foreign Minister Hussein Amir Abdollahian has also warned that an Israeli retaliation could lead Iran to launch an even bigger attack.
If the Israeli regime makes a mistake, this time Iran's response, as Iran's military commanders announced, will not be minimal but immediate and severe.
The Cabinet has approved proposals to increase sentences for knife-related crimes. Justice Minister Helen McEntee said the planned new sentences would protect young people and reflect the seriousness of the crime. The move has been welcomed by the Taoiseach, who promised a swift government response to law and order problems. Our political correspondent, Micheál Lehan.
Legislation to give effect to these new sentencing terms will now have to go before the Oireachtas. Given the urgency around this issue, it is likely to happen quickly. Under the proposals, maximum jail sentences for possession of a knife will increase from 5 to 7 years. The same change will apply to sentences for trespassing with a knife and for producing a knife during a crime. While the maximum sentence for the sale or distribution of a knife will increase from 7 to 10 years. The move was welcomed by the Labour Party, but Social Democrats TD Catherine Murphy said while it is important that people feel safe, a multi-layered response is needed. She believes that sanctions on their own don't work and called for significant investment in youth work and early intervention measures.
The Minister for Enterprise, Peter Burke, has confirmed he will recommend to Cabinet today that the planned June EU patent court referendum is postponed. Speaking on his way into Cabinet this morning, Minister Burke said he will be setting out the government's position to postpone until a future date. The Irish Kidney Association has said it is looking forward to new legal provisions being commenced whereby people who do not wish to donate their organs can opt out. The association said that any person who does not opt out will be considered a potential donor. However, organ donation will only go ahead if there is family consent. Our health correspondent, Fergal Bowers.
There are currently over 600 people on the transplant waiting list. Last year, there were a total of 282 organ transplants, including 30 living kidney transplants. The Human Tissue Act came into law this year, and it includes provisions for an online opt-out register. This will record details of people who choose not to be considered a potential donor. The Irish Kidney Association said today it is looking forward to the new legal provisions being commenced by government. The association said that any person who does not opt out will be considered a potential donor. However, organ donation will only go ahead if there is family consent. National Organ Donor Awareness Week begins next Saturday.
The Dublin City Coroner's Court has heard that the jury in the Stardust inquest is very close to reaching verdicts. The foreman of the 12-person jury told the proceedings this morning that they were putting the final wording together at the moment. He was responding to a question from the coroner, Dr. Myra Cullinan, who asked the jury what progress they'd been making. The jury initially retired to consider their verdicts on Wednesday the 3rd of April and have been deliberating for around 36 hours. A 27-year-old GAA player from Belfast has been killed in a car crash in Australia. Ryan Stranley from Upper Springfield Road, Ryan Straney from Upper Springfield Road in the city died early yesterday. His car was one of several cars struck by a vehicle being driven the wrong way on a section of motorway near Sydney. Ryan played with Love Jarrag GAA Club in West Belfast. The torch for the 2024 Olympic Games was lit in ancient Olympia in Greece this morning to mark 100 days countdown to Paris. The traditional ceremony marks the final stretch of the preparations for the start of the Games. It will culminate with the lighting of the Olympic flame in the French capital at the opening ceremony on July the 26th. Now the weather.
RTE Radio 1 weather with Grant. Create a modern, minimalistic home decor look and warmth in every room with Grant Uflex underfloor heating. Visit grant.ie.
The rest of today will be cool with scattered showers and some sunny spells. Highest temperatures 9 to 12 degrees in a light to moderate northwest breeze. Brian.
Thank you, Brian. Still to come this lunchtime, Israel calls for international sanctions on Iran's missile program as it ponders retaliation for the weekend attack, the latest from Jerusalem. Air under fire after those shocking revelations over customer complaints with a move to bring the company before a Doyle committee. Tougher knife crime penalties, the experience of one trauma surgeon who treats victims and says new thinking is needed. The Minister for Housing confirms plans to extend the Help to Buy and First Home schemes. And close to a verdict, the latest this lunchtime from the Stardust inquests.
The streets full of fans. The woolen plats, the ice cream van, the rush to your seat, the crowd on its feet, the roar as the net explodes. The feeling that the county must be empty because everyone is here. Yeah, some things can't be missed.
The GAA Football All-Ireland Senior Championship. Experience the unforgettable. Sponsored by Allianz, AIB and Supervalue. Advanced ticket sales only at GAA.ie or selected centre and Supervalue stores. GAA, where we all belong.
With so many conflicting views on electric vehicles, it's hard to get time to work out what's right or wrong. At Kia, we want to give you that time. 48 hours. Register for your Kia EV 48-hour test drive and take time to experience electric vehicle driving. Time to understand Kia's rapid charging capabilities and time to see how the savings really stack up. With 48 hours, you'll have all the time you need to come to the right decision for you. To register, visit kia.com. Terms and conditions apply. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Hello again, you're listening to the news at 1. Calls for international sanctions on Iran and threats of retaliation. Israel is confronting its deadliest enemy on both the diplomatic and military fronts today after Iran's unprecedented missile and drone attack at the weekend. Israel is urging international sanctions on Iran's missile program in what it described as a diplomatic attack on the regime in Tehran. The Israeli War Cabinet, meanwhile, is meeting today for a third time since the attack, with the head of the army, Herzi Halevi, saying Iran's actions will not go unanswered.
Iran's attack has created new opportunities for cooperation in the Middle East. We are closely assessing the situation. We remain at our highest level of readiness. Iran will face the consequences for its actions. We will choose our response accordingly.
Meanwhile, in Gaza, Israeli forces have begun a military operation in Beit Hanuna, a town in the northeast of the Strip. The Hamas-run health ministry says at least 33,843 Palestinians in Gaza have been killed since October. Well, a short time ago, we spoke to BBC's chief international correspondent, Lise Doucette, who's in Jerusalem, first about those calls by Israel for wider sanctions on Iran.
From those unprecedented early hours of the morning on Sunday, when Iran launched a swarm of suicide drones, cruise and ballistic missiles into the skies across this region and into Israel, it was clear that Israel would respond in some way. And what is increasingly becoming clear by the day, that even though we don't know what form and the timing of a military response, they want to have a multi-pronged retaliation. And one of them is this diplomatic campaign. The Israeli Foreign Minister, Israel Katz, posted on X, formerly Twitter, that we have to stop Iran before it is too late. He says he has written to 32 of his counterparts around the world, urging them to impose more sanctions on the Islamic Republic of Iran, urging them to declare the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps a terrorist organization. Of course, Iran is already one of the most sanctioned countries in the world for its over its nuclear program, over its human rights record. But Israel thinks that Iran has to be even more isolated.
Israel is promising some form of retaliation, Lise. What kind of pressures, though, are there within the Israeli cabinet over that? And particularly, what form of retaliation might be under contemplation here? What's the pressure on Netanyahu internally?
We understand that the War Cabinet, which has already met twice and for sessions which went on for hours and were said to be marked by heated arguments, we understand we'll meet again today. We understand that there are divisions among the members of the War Cabinet, in particular with some of the military, former military generals, like Benny Gantz, saying that we should retaliate immediately. Perhaps that is the reflex of the Israeli military, that down through the years when Israel is hit, it hits back hard and immediately. Prime Minister Netanyahu, of course, is a politician who has made the threat from Iran the campaign of his entire career. But he's understood, but he's also a very cautious politician. And so we think a number of options are on the table. They could, of course, take the maximalist line, which would be to attack Iran directly, but that's exactly what politicians and diplomats and military leaders in capitals around the world, including London and Dublin, are really worried about. But they could also, there's reports today, they could, for example, attack proxies. They could attack in Lebanon against Iran's most important, most powerful ally, and that is the Hezbollah militias. They could attack in Syria and in Iraq again. All of them would have different kinds of severity in the eyes of Iran. And bear in mind that for Iran, they insist that this was a retaliatory strike for the Israeli strike. Israel hasn't acknowledged that, but it's known to be its work, the strike on the consulate of Iran in the Syrian capital, Damascus, which killed some of Iran's senior revolutionary guards in the region. Mm-hmm. Today, Iran's foreign minister was on the phone with the UN Secretary General saying that Iran had acted in its legitimate right to self-defense.
Meanwhile, of course, the Israeli operation in Gaza continues, and the latest developments there, an Israeli operation in the town of Beit Hanun. What can you tell us about that?
Yes, it is now the 193rd day of the grievous Israel-Gaza war. It has slipped down the ranking of the world's attention, but it is still very much going on. Not just the military operations. You mentioned Beit Hanun, that is in the northeast corner of the country. Also on the minds of Israeli military planners and most of all Prime Minister Netanyahu, they still want to carry out the operation, the last stronghold of Hamas, they say, in the southern corner, which is in Rafah. That's an operation that the U.S. and Britain and aid chiefs have warned Israel not to carry out because it would inflict such huge humanitarian cost, and it would simply not succeed. There are indications that because of these tensions with Iran, that operation could be delayed, but it certainly isn't off the agenda.
The BBC's Lise Doucette speaking to us earlier from Jerusalem. Here, Gardaí say a peaceful protest is continuing today at a site in Newtown Mount Kennedy in County Wicklow that has been prepared to accommodate international protection applicants. The Garda Public Order Unit, which was present yesterday, is no longer on site. Our correspondent Paul Reynolds has more on this. Paul, first of all, what happened yesterday? Well, we seem to have a problem there with Paul Reynolds. First, we'll return to that in due course. Meanwhile, Sinn Féin TD Martin Kenny has written to the Oireachtas Communications Committee requesting that AIR's CEO and senior management appear before them. Yesterday, AIR was fined €7,500 in the Dublin District Court after pleading guilty to 12 counts of breaching regulations governing how complaints should be handled by providers. Deputy Kenny joins us now from our Oireachtas studio. Very good afternoon to you. Welcome to the
Good afternoon,
one.
Brian.
It's just back in 2020, in November 2020, when the previous chief executive of AIR, Carolyn Lennon, was in before the committee, Martin Kenny, promising to do better, acknowledging there'd been failures in customer care, and yet we had everything that transpired yesterday in court under a new CEO. It seems that appearances before the committee don't make much difference.
Well, they didn't on that occasion, and hopefully we can change that. I think the behaviour has been despicable. What we've here is we have AIR, a major company, which provides an awful lot of our infrastructure for telecommunications and for internet and broadband communications across the country, simply having a policy where they won't deal with their own customers. And, you know, it is deplorable that they think that they can carry on in that fashion. It's what's surprising about it, while we've had years of complaints and problems, what's surprising about this is that it has been uncovered that it was actually company policy to be in breach of regulations. And that's really the issue that we need to get to grips with. And that's why I've asked the CEO and senior management of AIR to come before the committee to be held to account for this for once and for all, because it simply can't continue in this manner, because it's not just customers of AIR, but many of the other providers out there provide their services through AIR because they're a major wholesaler. And for a lot of ordinary people out there who are doing their best, you know, they ring up AIR, they ring up their provider, and they get the runaround with them. And that has been the case for so long. And we simply have to stop this and get a proper customer service put in place.
Is there a job of work here for the Oireachtas in terms of the sanctions that are available to the courts?
Yes.
And the powers of Comreg? AIR is a company that in 2023 turned over 1.2, almost 1.3 billion euros.
That's right.
A fine of €7,500 doesn't seem much of a penalty.
No, it's no penalty at all in reality. And you know, we understand that that was the court, because it was a district court. It was, if you like, hamstrung as to the level of penalty it could apply. But that's something that we also need to look at as to the powers both of Comreg and indeed the penalties that are in place when people are in breach of regulations of this nature. Because it's simply unacceptable that we can have AIR continuing to behave in this manner. As you say, in the past, Brian, you know, they've come before committees, they've come before the media, they've promised that, you know, they were going to do better, that they'd sorted out all the difficulties, that they'd a bad history, and that they've that new turn the corner. We heard that so many times. We simply can't accept that now. We have to get to grips with this and ensure that we get, you know, not just proper place and a proper process in place for logging complaints, but actually ensure that the complaints are dealt with, that people get the service that they pay for and need to be provided with.
So if you got the AIRCOM chiefs in front of you, what would be the questions you'd be putting to them? What would you want to hear from them that would give you the kind of reassurances that you and their customers would want?
I think we'd need full transparency as to how their system works, as to where the system has gone wrong in the past, as to how that has been corrected, as to what procedures are going to put in place to ensure that this cannot happen again, as to where the investment is going to be to ensure that there are enough, first of all, customer care staff there, but also that there is a quick and proper response to issues that people have, whether it's a problem with a mast or it's a problem on the ground in a box or whatever, that there's people out there to do that work. Because it seems what they've been doing is avoiding doing the work and putting people on a runaround, sometimes for months and years in some cases. And it's simply unacceptable. And if they're going to be a major provider of internet services across the country, which the state is paying them to do in many cases, we simply have to have proper service provided.
Martin Kenny of Sinn Féin, thanks very much for that. Well, returning now to that protest in Newtown, Mount Kennedy in County Wicklow, our correspondent Paul Reynolds is on the line now. We've made contact, I think, with you, Paul. So the Garda Public Unit deployed yesterday at this site has been prepared to accommodate international protection applicants. What happened yesterday?
Well, the Gardaí say the unit was called in to River Lodge yesterday to enable construction workers access the site because they were being prevented from doing their work, and the unit's members are specially trained in peaceful crowd management. Now, an attempt had been made to barricade the lane, and one man was arrested on suspicion of throwing a pallet. He has since been released without charge. A file will be sent to the Director of Public Prosecutions. The Garda headquarters said today that the public order unit was not heavy-handed and policed the situation yesterday in soft caps, not in protective equipment or full helmets and shields. It says its members are trained in how to move people who don't want to comply with the directive.
Okay, well, I think we've got some problems there with Paul's line. We seem to have lost him again. We'll try and re-establish contact. The Cabinet has approved plans to strengthen knife crime legislation. Maximum sentences will increase from 5 to 7 years. The Cabinet also agreed to increase the penalty for importing knives and such weapons from 7 to 10 years. The Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee, said the planned new sentences would protect young people and reflect the seriousness of the crime.
But what we always need to do is try and put in place preventative measures. Thankfully, we are not in a situation where we see, potentially in London or Glasgow, where we have in particular gangs, where knife crime is a really serious issue. We have seen a small and incremental problem here in Ireland, and we need to make sure that it doesn't get any worse. So this is about making sure, to Minister Brown's point, the punishment matches the crime. At the moment, simple possession for a knife is 5 years. Possession with intent is also 5 years. So what is happening here is we're increasing the sentence to match the crime that's been committed here.
The Minister for Justice. Let's talk to Dr. Morgan McMonagall now, who's a vascular and trauma surgeon at University Hospital Waterford. A very good afternoon to Dr. McMonagall. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us today. This is an issue that you've spoken out on in the past. What's your reaction to this decision now by the Cabinet?
I will congratulate the executive and the cabinet and the office in general that we've passed further toughening of our laws in respect to knife crime, because, you know, we've seen from reports over the last number of years there has been an increase in the number of seizures of offensive weapons by an Garda Síochána, and I think it's very important that the have responded to the worrying trend among people from age 15 to about 24, in particular with regards to knife crime.
Morgan, I'm not sure this line is holding up. We're getting a lot of breakup on it, so I think what we might do is call you back and try and establish a better connection to you, because we're very interested to hear what you have to say about this, but let's just see if we can get a better connection to you. Meanwhile, the Minister for Housing, Dara O'Brien, has said plans to extend the Help to Buy and First Home Bridge the Gap schemes for 5 years were pretty much approved at a Cabinet subcommittee meeting yesterday. Speaking on his way into the Irish Home Builders Association House Building Summit today, Mr. O'Brien said the issue would probably go to Cabinet next week.
The Help to Buy grant, which let's remember, it's people's tax back in their pocket to help with their deposit. About 45,000 households have claimed that grant, and it's a real assistance to people. So we want to extend that for a further 5 years. And the Bridge the Gap First Home Scheme, which I brought in just less than 2 years ago, has over 4,000 approvals already, 4,000 homes being purchased through that scheme. So it's working, it's good. I got approval yesterday to make a further contribution to the scheme of €40 million, which would be matched by the bank, so a further €80 million into that scheme. So I'd like to see that continue for the next 5 years. It's worked really, really well. We targeted originally 8,000 home purchases through it. We're well on track to do that. And it's a real support for first-time buyers, many of whom are caught in a rental trap or living with their folks at home and want to be able to bridge that gap to buy a home.
When will that go to Cabinet?
That's pretty much approved yesterday, so it'll go to Cabinet next week. We'd expect to make the provision available. We've enough money for this year. This is really in looking into next year. So that will go to Cabinet within the next 2 weeks, more than likely next week, but that's been agreed as well. So that's very positive. It gives certainty for those who are out there looking to buy homes that the supports that government are giving to Help to Buy in First Home, which average around €100,000 per home, and people need to know that that's available for them, that that's actually going to continue. But obviously the big challenge is keeping supply and that increase in supply. We've a target this year of about 34,500. We intend to exceed that again this year. I'll be assessing the ESRI data when that comes back into me and looking to set the new targets for the remainder of the decade in autumn of this year.
Dara O'Brien speaking earlier. Well, let's return now to that Cabinet decision to increase sentences for knife-related crime. We were talking to Dr. Morgan McMonagall from University Hospital Waterford. I think we've established a connection again with you, Dr. McMonagall. Apologies for that. You are welcoming this decision by the government to increase sentences, but you've called for other measures in the past as well. What more would you like to see done?
Well, yes, I do think what Minister McNamee has done is a really positive step in the right direction for the entire country, because we've seen an increase in the number of seizures by An Garda Síochána Síochána, and we have seen some quite high-profile cases of knife crime being carried out in various centres around the country. I guess, from my point of view as a healthcare provider, while one will always want to support, you know, legislation and An Garda Síochána Síochána's role is for, you know, peace and justice, there's more to the reasons behind why someone carries an offensive weapon. And I do feel that as a society, it's not just Helen McEnany's role, as a society, we all need to address the reasons why a young person chooses to carry a knife. And even if they have not got the intent to use that knife, simply by carrying it in the environment that they're going to will increase their risk of being severely injured by between two and three times.
And is that
compared to if they don't carry it?
I mean, is that supported by your own experience of treating victims of knife crime that very often perhaps they themselves were carrying a knife?
Yeah, we haven't been great in Ireland at really addressing the issues behind it. And this is definitely a positive step in that it puts a new focus, not just by the cabinet and the Oireachtas and the legislature on it, but for everybody should now refocus on it. It certainly has worked in various communities in larger metropolitan areas such as London. It's worked really well in Scotland, and something similar has worked really well in large urban areas of North America when it comes to gun crime. That you need, it's one thing punishing, but the responsibility goes further than that, and that you need to address the issues behind this. There's a very simple sort of concept that was described back in the 1970s called the Haddon, H-A-D-D-O-N matrix, that looked at what you can do before an event happens, what you can do to mitigate when an event happens, and then after an event. And in healthcare and in the justice system, we put so much money and effort into addressing issues after the issue has happened. And that's just the way of the world. Mm-hmm. Hospitals are the same. What we haven't been good at is looking at the pre-event interventions.
Right. I mean, one of the ideas that's been mooted, and I think it's been applied in Scotland, maybe elsewhere as well, is this question of an amnesty. So people can hand in knives, can hand in weapons, and no questions asked. But it's taken out of circulation.
Yeah, I think that's only it's a part of the chain. Amnesty has worked really well around the world, in Australia and in the UK, when it comes to guns. Unfortunately, it tends to happen after a tragedy. Certainly in the greater Glasgow area, the police there have had various amnesties that have kick-started. Like, the amnesty on its own isn't enough. It kick-starts a new wave of tackling knife crime and interpersonal violence and unintentional injuries across the board. And so it on its own is not enough, but it's a good way to start it, because if you do an actual amnesty for knives within the community, it also kickstarts possibly community policing on a much more local level, which has been shown in various communities, certainly in the UK, to make a difference to young people entering a life of crime.
Right. Well, plenty of food for thought there, and perhaps there will be further developments on this. But for the moment, we leave it at that. Dr. Morgan McMonagall from Waterford, thanks very much indeed for talking to us. Residents in Portrane in North County Dublin have expressed concern about the speed of coastal erosion there after beachside properties experienced significant damage during the most recent storm. Fingal County Council says it has put emergency interventions in place while it awaits planning permission for longer term measures to prevent erosion. Our reporter Samantha LeBerry has more on this. Samantha, can you tell us something about what's been happening along the coast at Port Rann?
Well, Brian, since 2011, the seaside village of Port Rann, which is in North County Dublin, close to Donabate, has had ongoing issues with coastal erosion. And the residents there say they've been watching as the large sand dunes that once lined Port Rann beach have been gradually disappearing before their eyes. And the creeping tide has begun eroding the land above the strand that's lined with numerous houses. In 2019, one house had to be demolished by the local authority after it collapsed onto the beach. And the most recent development happened just over a week ago when Storm Kathleen passed over the country. The storm dislodged a large piece of decking at the rear of a property that backs onto Port Rann Beach. It's now dangling precariously between the sand dunes and the shore, and that large wooden structure, it's quite a sight to behold. And it still has a shower and an inflatable hot tub attached to it, and you can see the pictures on the RTÉ News website at the moment.
So that homeowner obviously very concerned, but more broadly, how concerned are locals at this?
Well, yesterday I spoke to two residents who live along the beach. The first is Louise Duffy, and her family have had a house in Port Rann for 45 years. She showed me old photos from the view from the house that you can see used to be obscured by high sand dunes. But as we sat in her front garden yesterday, there's no sand dunes anymore. In fact, you can see straight out across the sea to Lambay Island. And while it's a stunning view, and yesterday it had the added beauty of a really vivid rainbow stretching across the bay, as we sat there in the sunshine, Louise told me that living with coastal erosion is far from idyllic.
I can remember as a child there was 30 metres of sand dunes in front of us, and you can see today now there's no sand dunes left at all. They're all gone. We've absolutely no protection from the sea. It's terrifying, to be honest. A lot of people think it's lovely to live by the sea, but when the sea is getting as close to your home as it is for us, you just wake up at night and you can hear the tide crashing, and you know the coast is being eaten away. And we're not at risk of becoming homeless. We are going to become homeless. It's just a matter of time. So that's the very worrying part that faces us, that we have to look for alternative options for somewhere to live. It's extremely stressful, that hanging over you constantly, the thought that you are going to be made homeless.
So Samantha, what about the question of sea defences? Has there been any help for these residents?
Well, in the past couple of years, Fingal County Council installed these large concrete blocks onto the beach, which are known as CBs, and they're designed to reduce the impact of the tide on the properties behind them. Now, in a statement to RTÉ News yesterday, Fingal County Council says these are an emergency intervention pending the approval of future works to provide more enduring coastal protection at this location. And it says it arranges to occasionally relocate the CBs to optimise their effectiveness, but they say they do this in anticipation of the longer term project, which is progressing through the planning process. Now, if you walk along Port Rann Beach, you can see some residents have taken matters into their own hands. One property I saw had numerous sandbags stacked up against the sand dunes. Others had piles of stones lined up between the houses and the shore. But the recent storm has really worried people there. Tom Barton has lived in Port Rann for 25 years, and he says he's lost about 20 metres of his back garden over the past 12 to 13 years. He says the past year in particular has been the worst, and he doesn't think that his house will still be standing in a year's time.
Last week's storm has been huge. Like, I'm not losing a half a metre a year, I'm losing metres a year, which is really, really a serious problem, because I've lost basically from where the CBs are all the way to here now, and really aggressively over the last 2 or 3 years it's really hit us bad, but this year was really bad. I've lost actually 5 or 6 metres maybe in the last storm that just went.
So Samantha, we've heard from Fingal County Council. What about central government? Has it been saying anything about this situation?
Well, the locals say they've been waiting years for a permanent solution, and they're now appealing to the Minister for Housing and Local Government, Dara O'Brien, who's also a TD for the area, to take emergency measures to protect their homes. In a statement, Dara O'Brien says he's aware of the devastating impact coastal erosion is having on communities in North Dublin, and that his department is driving the national response needed to deal with coastal change. Now, in October of last year, the government published a report of the Interdepartmental Group on National Coastal Change Management Strategy. It contains a range of recommendations, and the department says it and Minister O'Brien are playing a key role in coordinating and driving this essential work. It also says the minister is very much aware that a structured, planned and evidence-based approach to dealing with the matter is vitally important. But the residents in Port Rand say the sands of time are against them, and they say that any help, it can't come soon enough.
Samantha Lebrary reporting from North Dublin. After the break, we'll be hearing about the latest from the Stardust inquests.
What makes you, you? Sometimes the answer lies in ripping up the script. It's in those unguarded, unpredictable moments that documentaries show us who we really are.
You have to believe it.
This is reality, raw and unfiltered. These are Irish lives in all their unvarnished glory. This is unflinching and unforgettable. This is Ireland, unscripted. Documentaries on RTE. Stream now on RTE Player.
It all begins with a thrump as the needle nestles into a deep valley of vinyl. Sizzle and crackle turns into fizzle and scratch. And the mesmerizing rotations of pop and hiss and...
Ah, the crackle of a vinyl record. Just one of the ordinary sounds rediscovered by Sean. Whatever sounds you've lost, our hearing experts could help you find them again. Book a free hearing test at Specsavers.
RTE Radio 1.
Peppa Pig, George and family are back in a brand new stage show. Peppa Pig's Fun Day Out. Live at 3 Olympia on Saturday, May 11th and Sunday, May 12th. Get ready to sing and dance with colourful scarecrows, feed the penguins and build big sandcastles. Peppa's Fun Day Out. Tickets available now from Ticketmaster.ie.
Entertainment updates on RTE Radio 1.
Hello again, you're listening to the news at 1. The Dublin City Coroner's Court has heard the jury in the Stardust inquests is very close to reaching verdicts. The foreman of the 12-person jury told the proceedings this morning that they were putting the final wording together at the moment. Conor Hunt is our reporter at the inquests and he joins us now. Conor, what's the latest this morning?
Well, as normal, proceedings got underway here at 11 o'clock with the jury taking their seats in the courtroom, Brian. The coroner, Dr. Myra Cullinan, briefly addressed them at that stage and said that she would be inquiring later in the morning about the progress that they were making. This is day 10 of their deliberations. They originally retired to consider their verdicts back on April the 3rd. So they've been deliberating now for a total of around 36 hours. Just after midday, the coroner called the jury back into the courtroom and asked if they were making progress. And it was then that the foreman said that they were very close and said they were putting the final wording together. He also said, though, that the jurors had some additional questions for the coroner, and just at around 1 o'clock, those questions were read out in the courtroom. Four questions in all, quite technical, all related to the legal charge. So we're now in a position where we and the jury are awaiting the coroner to provide clarity and answer those questions. Proceedings will resume again at 2 p.m. As we know, these inquests have sat for 122 days. We've heard testimony from over 300 witnesses. So there is a lot for the jury to consider. They've been tasked with returning verdicts in respect of each of the 48 people who died in the disaster, and also to make findings into the circumstances of the 1981 fire. A number of families, Brian, in court as always today. For them and for others, the wait still goes on, but it does look like the end now may be in sight.
Conor Hunt, thanks indeed for that. The company which owns Facebook and Instagram, Meta, has called for age verification to be implemented across Europe. Representatives from the social media companies, including TikTok, Meta and X, will all be before an Oireachtas Committee on Children this afternoon to discuss the protection of children in the use of artificial intelligence. In its opening statement to the committee, it said that the most effective way for this work would be to implement a verification process at an operating system or at the App store level. Well, for more, let's talk to our work in technology correspondent, Brian O'Donovan. This is an issue of very great concern to very many parents up and down the country, Brian. It's a difficult one, perhaps, to get right. What are the social media companies now expected to tell the committee about what their solution might be?
Yeah, Brian, age verification, very difficult to get right. Always a tricky one, because if you think about it, it's so anonymous. A child, a person, just has to put in a date of birth or tick a box, and then there's very little follow-up when it comes to proving what age you actually are. Meta, in its opening statement, expected to say in the next couple of hours when it appears before the Oireachtas Children's Committee that it believes a significant step forward should be taken at a European level to ensure that parents only need to verify the age of their child once, and then they're saying thereafter the child would always be put in an age-appropriate situation in every single app that they use. They're saying that this should be done at the app store level or operator system level. Now, they're saying this would not remove responsibility from every app to also have processes in place, but I think, Brian, there are many out there that will very much say, look, it's up to the platform to be in charge of what age the person is on their platform using their services and not the responsibility of anybody else. So it'll be interesting to see what the committee members will have to say about that particular one when it is mentioned later on this afternoon. Also on the issue of age, when it comes to X, formerly known as Twitter, it is expected to tell the committee that X is not the platform of choice for children and teens, and that anybody who says they are under 13 will not be allowed on the platform.
Brian, the subject of today's hearing is protection of children in the use of artificial intelligence. Now, what are the companies expected to say about AI?
Yeah, so TikTok, first off, in its opening statement, is expected to say that artificial intelligence plays an integral role in its work when it comes to content moderation and checking the content that is being put up on the platform. And they're saying a combination of cutting-edge technology combined with human oversight and judgment is the best way for this. And they're saying they're seeing the evolution of AI in their processes, making it quicker to spot and stop threats, understand online behavior, and improve the speed and consistency of enforcement. Interestingly, Meta, Brian, in its opening statement, is expected to say that yes, AI is helpful when it comes to taking down things like fake accounts, but it's saying it's less effective when it comes to bullying and harassment, because they're saying that is quite contextual and not as immediately obvious to a piece of AI software to spot.
Brian O'Donovan, thanks indeed for that.
Sport on RTE Radio 1.
And it's very good afternoon to Siobhan Madigan. Siobhan.
Brian, thank you. Less than 24 hours after the announcement of the arrival later this year of Jordy Barrett on a short-term deal, Leinster have today confirmed that second row Ross Maloney will leave the province. The 29-year-old has instead agreed a move to English Premiership side Bath, signing a three-year contract to work under their former Munster boss Johan van Graan at the Rec. The British and Irish Lions have announced a €3.5 million grant to be split between their four rugby unions ahead of the first Lions Women's Tour. Royal London, a British insurance and investment firm, has provided the grant, which will be used to invest in female coaches and players in Ireland, England, Scotland and Wales. The tour, which will take place in 2027, will see the current world champions New Zealand host a three-test series against the Lions. The proposed takeover of Everton Football Club has hit another stumbling block. Their bidders, 777 Partners, have been forced to secure a last-minute extension on a £160 million loan. The latest missed deadline drags the saga past the seven-month mark since Farhad Moshiri agreed to sell his shareholding in Everton FC. The first two semi-finalists in this season's Champions League will be known tonight. Barcelona have a 3-2 advantage heading into the home leg of their tie with PSG. It's the live offering on RTE2 television this evening. Atletico Madrid are 2-1 heading to Germany to face Borussia Dortmund. In the final round of World Championship qualifiers, former champion Stuart Bingham leads Lewis Heathcott by 3-2 at present. Jack Lasowski is 4-3 up on Matthew Stevens, and another former semi-finalist involved is Ricky Walden. He trails 3-1 to Mark Davis. And something to look out for today, the return to action of the 22-time tennis Grand Slam champion Rafa Nadal in Barcelona. He plays a first-round encounter with Flavio Cobolli of Italy.
Thanks to you for that, Siobhan Madigan at the Sports Desk. Our team today, Mark Dwyer was on sound, the broadcast coordinator Anne-Marie Donlan, the editor of the News of One Today was Laura Whelan. Do stay tuned for Liveline, that's next, but from all of us here, thanks for listening and a very good afternoon to you.